Welcome back to Browns Daily. Honored to have the godfather of CBD himself, the notorious VIC, Vic Carucci, with us here in Indy. Notorious, how are you?
I am great. It's always great to be with you. I look forward to this reunion.
It's the best. Yeah. It's glorious. It's glorious. We're going to have a good time tonight. But before we get to all of that, let's talk a little bit about the big issue that kind of ties the Browns and the Bills together right now, at least by media people speculation. Yeah. Tyrod Taylor, is he going to be a Buffalo Bill in 2017?
I'm leaning against that. I mean, I don't have a firm handle on his future. The organization might have a firmer one than they're saying publicly, but publicly, you've heard the same thing I have, which is to say that a decision has yet to be made, that they're, quote, going through the process. Those are the words from Sean McDermott.
It wasn't a ringing endorsement from Sean McDermott.
And, you know, in answer to a direct question, are you keeping Tyrod Taylor, when you hear we're going through the process, I'm not sure that that's love. I don't think that's the definition of a love response. But that's how he did respond to it. Here's my sense of it. I think the Bills see him as a good enough quarterback to be their starter. I don't think the issue is that they look down upon Tyrod. The issue is strictly the way this contract is structured. The fact that come March 11, you've got to decide whether you're going to pick up $30.8 million, a commitment that has you tied to this guy for probably more than 2 years. Let's call it 2+ years for sake of discussion. And you're Sean McDermott. You've just taken over this team. You've signed a 5-year contract to be a head coach. Do you want to devote those first three critical years to a quarterback that you may not be sure is your long-term answer? And I think therein is the problem. If this deal were different, if this contract didn't have that big pill in it, so to speak, I could foresee the Bills saying, hey, we'll keep you around. You're our guy that's good enough until we find somebody better. But that deal doesn't allow for that.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, with the lack of available quarterbacks, he's actually in a position of pretty good leverage financially. Oh, he doesn't need to say, well, I'll reduce this for you. I can go out and probably get more on the open market.
And therein is another, you know, you hit the other point here. I think the other reason why, as we tape this, this is 9 days until the deadline.
Right.
With 9 days and counting, a decision of this magnitude hasn't been, quote, finalized because they're buying time. I mean, I think there's clearly a hope and effort to see where he stands versus the rest of the market. What's the rest of the market? The Browns, probably the Jets, probably the 49ers, just to name some teams that could be in that area of saying, hey, kick the tires on Tyrod Taylor. And there might be another team or two out there. So if you're Tyrod's agent, Adisa Bakari, what are you doing? You're gathering all your info and then coming back to the Bills and said, look, guys, if you think we're going to take a pay cut, sorry, it's not going to happen. And my sense would be, I mean, it's easy to spend the Browns' money or other teams' money in my position, but I just think that there will be that taker that will put some serious money up there for a starting quarterback and see him as a longer term answer. But it doesn't have to be structured. They wouldn't have the burden of structuring it in a way that it's currently structured for him now with Buffalo.
Well, let's look at it, though. If they do decide to move on from it, what are the alternatives? Where do they go at quarterback, and would you expect them to draft one at number 10?
Well, I think a couple of things. That's one option. Having that 10th overall pick, I think, gives them some flexibility if there's somebody that they really like as they go through their scouting process. And, Sean, keep in mind something that's changed with this team from what it was over the last couple of years with Rex Ryan. Sean McDermott came up through the ranks as a scouting assistant with Philadelphia, so he embraces this process, as some coaches don't as well, right? He gets right in there, rolls up the sleeves, 3 a.m. He's up, he's in the building before 3:30 a.m. looking at tape and grinding tape, and that's his signature thing. So he loves to immerse himself and study every element of it and really determine, okay, do we have an answer in the draft? Is there an answer in free agency? Is there an answer via trade? And they're open to all of those options. To specifically answer your question, 10 overall is one way to go. Somewhere in the draft is a way to go. A free agent is the way to go. Now, a way to go. Is it your long-term answer? Likely not, but based on what we both think of the market. But it does give you someone to be the guy that I said Tyrod would be minus this contract idea, someone that tides you over until you find the long-term guy.
When you are looking at this quarterback class, a draft class, number one, how do you see these guys? And number two, kind of what are you hearing in general from people around the league?
I mean, I'm definitely hearing that there is very little excitement about the quality of this draft class. As compared to last year, and the jury is still way out. I mean, you've got your top overall pick who you still don't know can even play and adapt in the NFL, and Jared Goff. Carson Wentz certainly was a ball of fire early on, not so much later on, and still those questions linger. And the Dak Prescott thing came out of nowhere. Even the Cowboys didn't count on that happening, and it happened.
They wanted to get two other guys before him.
Exactly. So they caught lightning. And you don't catch lightning. We know that. I mean, you hope you that's what it is. In many cases, even with a higher pick. But the point is, this draft may have more room for that kind of thing where you've done your real thorough research and see enough qualities. Let's just use for a namesake Josh Dobbs from Tennessee. Here's a guy that physically you look at him, he's more of a whip of a guy. Doesn't look like, I mean, like compared to like a Prescott physically, he's not really filled out. But super smart, really. I watched him at the Senior Bowl and saw him make progress over 3 days of practice and take to coaching very well, and a decent enough arm. And you know, just his the biggest rep on him is just a little too spindly to maybe physically survive in the NFL. But 6'3", whatever he is in the teens, two teens. But a lot to like there. And then that super computer brain of his probably will serve him well as a player, I think, in this league. If a team wants to, say, fourth-round pick, whatever, mid-round pick, let's see what we got in a Josh Dobbs. That's the kind of guy, and I'm not projecting that he's going to be Prescott, but that's the kind of guy who could be Dak Prescott.
Absolutely. Is there anybody you like at the top of this class? Is there a notorious guy?
A notorious guy. I really feel that Deshaun Watson's electricity, that there's something about that package that I like. There's you can question height, you can question does he have the big enough hands in cold weather in places like Buffalo and Cleveland. That's a factor, and I've heard some questions about that, and I like his attitude. I'm not going to grow any taller, my hands aren't going to get any bigger, I'm going to work with what I have, and I think there's something about his innate skills, his dynamic ability to rise to the occasion, as he showed in that national championship game, that's exciting, and with more polish. And the problem is, he's a guy that you're going to invest that high pick in, and no one's going to say, now polish this guy. No, what they're going to say is, put him in there and play, because that's how we think, sadly.
Yeah, he's got that clutch meter about him, and there is something there with Deshaun Watson. Obviously, what's interesting is, college resume-wise, it's not even close to anybody else in this draft class, and yet he's not the consensus top pick.
No.
Which means there obviously are things that people in the NFL, there are questions that need to be answered.
Questions that need to be answered, things that need to be worked on. You know, and then you hear the hits on Trubisky, what he's lacking, and Deshaun Kizer, and what he doesn't have going for him. So they all have enough flaws. And
I thought you'd be a Kizer guy. Big, strong, can throw the ball.
I know. We're going back to our debate days.
I like Kizer,
show.
Though. I think he's good.
I do, too. But I'm a little concerned that there might be just some the development may not be what I've been told, too, by some scouts. The development might be slow enough that for a second-round projection, which I think is where he falls, or a low first-round projection, your anticipation, your expectation will be much higher.
It'll be very interesting to see how these quarterbacks play out. Talk with the notorious VIC, Vic Carucci here. You guys all know that anyway. What do you think? Rosenhouses are in town today. We've heard Sashi talk about keeping Terrell Pryor. It's a priority today. Hugh Jackson called it important. Do you think the Browns and Terrell Pryor can get it done? What are you hearing on that front?
Well, you know, I'm hearing it will be expensive, because this guy played his way from sort of ordinary status to exceptional status because of what he overcame, and he overcame a lot, and became the most the most dynamic, consistent dynamic presence on a bad football team.
Yep.
And that's being used against the Browns heavily right now. what is being used in their favor is he wants to stick with this team. He loves being with Hugh Jackson. I've heard that conversation over and over again. He's told his agents, let's get something done. But I think that also puts pressure on the Browns, too, the whole home state, hometown aspect of Terrell wanting to have a positive thing as an organization. What can we hang our hat on? You got to hang your hat on something, and he's as good as for that as anybody is at this point. And again, how much does that cost? Because there's a price for all that.
Of course, there always is a price, and hopefully that can get worked out here. They were able to keep Jamie Collins, which I think was a good thing. And how was that viewed around the league as kind of maybe a turning point for this organization?
It certainly was viewed as to get it done was something that was I think it was preceded by skepticism. You know, are the Browns going to handle this one right? They made an investment trade in this guy. Now you can't drop the ball. You were making that deal for a long haul. So I think it's been viewed positively in that light. The flip side of it is typical of a lot of it's a cliche to say that the Patriots turn loose people that – you know, that they feel, Bill Belichick feels, sort of reached the expiration point of their usefulness, and they become somebody else's problem when they're no longer fitting and helping a defense that went on quite well without them. So if you can put that aside, and not an easy thing to do, and say, well, that's the Patriots, and they have
a way to Chandler Jones, and he's still pretty darn good.
And he's still pretty good. You know, yeah. both play. I think I'm not going to denigrate the quality of those players, but I'm always wary of an expatriate.
All right, well, and how about the one that is probably getting more talk than any backup quarterback, maybe in the history of the NFL, Jimmy Garoppolo right now, who seems to make a lot of sense for a team like the Browns, who have the ammunition. Now we're seeing the reports that doesn't matter who calls, doesn't matter what they offer. Do you believe that?
No, that's get the price up, make it a king's ransom, and they'll figure out a way. Oh, gee, Jimmy, see ya. You make the right deal.
They're not franchising him and paying Brady.
No.
So they've got to do something.
I think they have to do something. I think they're in the perfect position. And all this, to me, this is just, it's smart. It's typical of what the Patriots do.
The Patriots.
Gain leverage. Increase value. Get more for the trade for a guy whose body of work makes it as risky a move as you can make. But we have a history of these things, right, in this league, of people overpaying for backups with limited bodies of work. And I think I've always said this, the best guy on a team is a backup quarterback behind a great starter who doesn't play a lot but has shown some flashes of being good.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, he's very different than every backup coming out of New England before, a second-round pick, his pedigree, et cetera. But I think it will be an interesting one because for the Browns, let's say you did end up trading 12, you come out of this draft with Myles Garrett and Jimmy Garoppolo, and that's an opportunity to really turn things around.
It is. And look, it would be met well from the Browns' perspective, not just because of desperation, not just because of, okay, you got yourself a name guy here for an organization that needs that, but what have they been sort of preparing for? My sense is when you're gathering all those draft picks, when you're taking an approach that is a cumulative approach where you're adding up picks and adding up picks. Okay, you got to do something with those.
At some point, you got to cash that in.
Cash them in. And I don't necessarily think it's all to be used on rookies. I think you're using, some to gain other players that you are bringing up through your system, but I think it's set up for an occasion like this where you can put those on the table and say, okay, this is what we were saving up for. This is the best guy available to make this move, and we had the cash to, so to speak, the draft cash to do that where other teams don't.
When you look at Jimmy Garoppolo right now, what team do you think he plays for in 2017? If you could go to Vegas and go to the proverbial window, where would you be putting the notorious's hard-earned cash?
The cash. Look, if the Patriots are going to insist on the sort of like, just for the sake of our discussion, ridiculous price for a guy who has who's a backup guy with a limited amount of work. Say this is a dated reference, probably even for you young man. You remember Lawrence Welk? And it's one of his things. See, you didn't.
No.
Gibbs is nodding. Lawrence Welk was a band leader, and so I know. Old guy
for like reference. Bandstand or something?
No. He, but it was Bandstand. Lawrence Welk had this Eastern European accent, and he would go Anna one, Anna two, Anna three to start his. And he was like, and then there's bubbles, but the you know bubbles would be in the air as he led his band through this.
Was
through
it
this
Don whole Hunk time. Tiny Bubbles? I do know that.
Okay,
that's old school.
So the Lawrence Welk trade is a one and a two and a three. That okay. kind of thing where you're giving up high end stuff. Who's gonna do that? As I say, Browns are positioned.
If they want to.
But so I was going to answer your question to say Patriots is the most likely place he stays because I don't know anyone else that's going to give up the, quote, king's ransom.
To make it happen.
Right.
All right, so Notorious is saying he's staying.
Don Hall ransom.
You heard it there. That's right. There you go. Well, Notorious, always a pleasure to see you here and looking forward to hanging out. And
Go check YouTube for some Lawrence Welk stuff.
I'm going to. I want to know. I want to know the one and a two and a three. All right, we'll be back with more CBD Live from Indianapolis right after this.